Good evening. We've got new faces, Nord faces, and somebody drank their pee. But enough about what I did this weekend. It's the second part of Fear the Walking Dead. Welcome back. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Just going to do a little tweet here. In case you are not watching now, you're officially watching. We've retweeted. Welcome back. Woo-hoo! Ashley Chapman, how are you?
I'm great. I feel like we were on, like, summer break. This is awesome.
I've missed you.
I've missed you, too.
Are you wearing your new school shoes?
I am.
Excellent.
And I heard you drank some pee this weekend. You
Everybody
had a busy
drinks
summer,
some pee at the weekend.
You know?
It's the summer.
Never I'm a dull moment when Simon is
just following Nick's lead. Welcome back. It's the... How are we going to call it? Are we going to call this episode 8 or season 2,
like
part 2,
1.1?
Episode 1...
I guess for now we can just say mid-season premiere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is episode 8.
Yeah.
You know, AMC loves to do those little weird interjections right in the middle of the season. But yeah, it's the season-ish premiere.
Yeah, season-ish premiere.
Mid-ish, yeah, season-ish, cool. Premiere-ish. Just add ish on the end of it and it'll be good.
Let's talk about the episode. But first of all, we have to address the elephant in the room. Well, the elephant is not here.
Yeah.
Mr. Ben Bateman is not here this evening. He washed his one suit. He forgot about it.
Did it shrink?
It shrank.
Okay.
So he's very upset about that.
Okay.
And also, he would have been stark bullock naked.
Yeah.
So
well,
we thought it was best.
The fans wouldn't have mined that too much, but
yeah.
You know, pour one out for his suit.
Exactly. So
you, Ben.
This
we'll
is
see you next week.
For the suit that didn't make it, homie. But Ben will be here. He's just in Seattle.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they put us in the grown-up studio.
I know. This is like the swanky.
I like this.
You know?
I'm on a chair.
I feel official. I feel really official.
I'm actually taller on this chair than I am in real life. Now, if you're not watching this on YouTube, that would make no sense whatsoever. But yeah, we're in the big studio.
Yeah,
lovely. It's very nice. So, Alex, Ashley. It's been so long, I've forgotten your name. Now, Ashley, where can we find you on Twitter? Let's get that out of the way.
Ashley, not Alex, can be found on Instagram, Twitter, Ashley_Chapman. Welcome back, guys. Please tweet at us. Give us your comments, your feedback. Let us know what you thought of this mid-ish season premiere-ish
premiere-ish.
Episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you are going to be on the chat this evening. You're going to be keeping a little look at what people
yes,
are saying.
Yes, I am on the chat. So feel free to send me your comments, concerns, emotional outbursts. I am here for you all.
But that's enough about me. Okay, so the episode was called Grotesque.
Yes.
Now, that could refer to many things
yes.
in this episode, couldn't it? What do you think it refers to?
Well, like you said, a lot of things. I actually personally like that this was a very Nick-centered episode because I think leaving the mid-season finale where, you know, you see the groups, everybody kind of had somebody else looking out for them where Nick was sort of left sort of in the unknown and kind of off by himself. And a lot of grotesque things definitely happened in this episode. For me, I think, you know, he said a line towards the end of the episode. He wanted to go to a place where the dead weren't monsters.
Yeah.
So I think it was kind of him sort of immersing himself in a more grotesque environment or just practices, like him being a lot more comfortable being covered in the blood and, like, doing all of these things that he wouldn't normally do. So I just kind of felt like maybe this was just sort of reminiscent of – you know, all of the really grotesque things that happen in the episode, but also, like, his behaviors now becoming a little bit more grotesque and animal and almost like the dead, but he's still alive. So.
Well, he had to go through a lot in this episode because obviously when he started out, you know, he had a friend.
Yeah.
She was like, here's a bag, here's some water. A couple of
and
hours later,
luck.
Drinking his own piss.
Yeah.
Like, not... I mean,
I know. This was like Dances with Wolves goes wrong, you know, like all the worst
things. With urine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, drinking with urine.
Yeah.
So it's directed by Daniel Sackheim, who I'm not sure how many episodes he's actually done before, but one thing we all said, and obviously Ben, from my homies, we've all said previously that there's a lot of Nick mm-hmm. that we haven't known.
Yeah.
And this did do some flashbacks. It did kind of flesh that out. And obviously, certainly when Nick started the episode, when he was leaving the house with the female companion previously from obviously where they were at the end of the last season, it was very much a case of he was kind of cocky, where she was like, here's your bag, here's your water. He was like, yeah, great, this is fine. You go, It's gonna be fine. I've got my stuff. And then he very quickly realised, you could tell as he was walking along, and he was kind of working his way through the water quite quickly.
Yeah.
He already was kind of like, actually, I'm 100 miles from Tijuana.
Yeah.
I've kind of got to make this last a little bit. So he, within a few minutes of the episode, he kind of started to lose that cockiness because he hasn't been on his own
No, he hasn't.
Since the very start of the season, where we found him in the church and right at the beginning of the first season. So this is the first time he has been completely solo.
And I think, too, it also just sort of shows, like, now how he's starting to realize and understand. I mean, and even in this episode, there were moments where things just worked out for him. And I think he realized and acknowledged that things just worked out for him. So there's still a little bit of that cockiness there. But I think for one of the first times ever, he's experienced what it's like to truly be on his own and not have somebody there to save his ass, essentially. And even though, you know, he did have those moments where people did save his ass, it was a lot of him having to fend for himself and fight for himself in a way that he's never done before. And then, you know, having that juxtaposed with the flashback scenes where he's just always been very supportive.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's always had support around him. He's always had people there to just sort of pick up his slack. So for him to just completely be out there on his own, I thought it was really great. And it just reminds me of, you know, we'll do our Carol watch. Shout out to Ben again. On how he could possibly really transform into somebody who is more independent.
Yeah.
And but I think it could also be a negative thing, too, because I'm seeing now he's still feeling like he is special in the sense of, like, no matter what happens, no matter what he does, like, there's always going to be somebody there to save him, someone else always looking out for him. Like, things are just always going to work out for him.
Mm.
And I can see that possibly turning into him developing a really negative, you know, attitude and behavior towards the world.
I think that's fair. And also we found it very early on in this episode, you know, when she was saying, you know, you're going out on your own, but be very careful because there are going to be other places that embrace the dead. There are going to be these bandits who basically use it as an excuse to go crazy and do these really inhuman things. So whereas previously the dangers that faced him and faced everybody else in the group were maybe one individual or, you know, that kind of thing, this is very different. There are new and there are more dangers out there and different kinds of dangers that he won't have experienced before. We see at the beginning of the episode as well that he's heading for Tijuana. Very clearly they said that it was 100 miles. Later on we see that he got to, I think it was 40 miles to Tijuana.
Yeah.
So he covers a lot of ground.
Yeah.
It also kind of gives us geographically, because we lost this with the first half of the season with the boat. We knew where they landed and we kind of knew geographically where they were going to be.
Mm.
But this time we know that he's obviously heading towards Tijuana, which means he's heading back towards the border.
Yeah.
He's heading up towards San Diego and back to the border with California. Kind of exactly where he's going to end up and if he's going to go back across the border, if we're going to see the show go back into the States, we don't know yet. But at least we know now which way he's going.
What do you think about him, I guess, seeming very okay with the fact that he separated from the rest of the group? Because, you know, in his flashbacks, we did see his mom, and he talks a little bit about his dad, but there doesn't seem to be much, I don't want to say concern, because we haven't really seen that yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he just seems very okay with the fact that his mom and his sister and everybody else is kind of out there. And there really is, it's unclear as to whether or not he'll ever be able to find them. Like, he doesn't have a way to communicate with them at all. So what were your feelings about that? Were you okay with that? Or are you feeling like there's something else there?
Well, I think mentally he's kind of in a headspace where he's kind of got this sort of, you know, cockiness of youth about him, where he hasn't really had any alone time. He hasn't had any way to sort of get his head together since, obviously, the mayhem at the end of the first half of the season. And I think he's kind of looking at this at the moment, or certainly early on in the episode, as kind of like, okay, I'm going to use this as some me time. I'm going to, you know, we see him, obviously, when he's having his resting moments, we're seeing him dream and do these flashbacks and go back. So it's kind of him just going through all the stuff that he basically hasn't had chance to deal with, because obviously, going back to the very first season, obviously seeing his character progress, he's really gone from, as we now know, losing his girlfriend, who we have her name, Gloria.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's gone from that into the situation where obviously all the walkers are around, and then obviously to the issue on the ships and blah, blah, blah. He hasn't really had any time to digest anything else that he's personally gone through rather than that immediate environment. So I think he's kind of certainly in this at the start of the episode, kind of seeing it as actually I'm going to do, like Australians would say, I'm going to go out back. I'm going to take some time. I'm going to walk around and, you know, get my head together. So I think at the moment he's probably seeing it as a positive.
Yeah.
Obviously, we find out in the episode that he actually, it's not that much of a positive. Let's talk about the first flashback.
Yeah.
Okay, so we see who we now know as his girlfriend, Gloria, being introduced as Taipei Girl when they're in rehab. We've never touched on rehab with him before, and we also very, very quickly there, we learnt about what his issues were and why, obviously, he could perhaps talk to his mother, but not talk to his father about that, and his relationship with his father. I don't know how you feel about this, but I thought the fact that how he was defining his relationship with his mother, he obviously respected her, but he knew that because of her psychology background and counselling background, she could smell bullshit. If he was, she could see right through him.
Of course.
But the dad, he obviously saw the father as very much a, you teach me how to be a man.
Yeah.
And his father physically and mentally wasn't there for him. So he kind of felt like his dad had let him down.
Yeah.
He was ill-prepared to reach this point in his life. Perhaps that's why he seeked the solace of drugs.
Yeah.
We don't know, but we haven't really... That's never really been discussed previously, has it?
No, it hasn't. And, you know, I think it's great. I mean, this, to me, was an episode that was... And a lot of people in the chat have been saying that this is kind of more of a slower episode, and but it, we got a lot of great information, and we got a lot more depth about Nick and his past, and we haven't really heard that much. You know, there's been subtle mentions or just quick mentions about his father, but really him sort of breaking down in that moment and kind of saying, like, I need you to just kind of be there to teach me how to be a man and just be someone who is a functional, you know, contributing member of society. So, I mean, I'm sure that that contributes to a lot of his problems. But then I also kind of saw it as, you know, he likes to, he really likes to put the blame on a lot of other people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He doesn't always take ownership for his own actions. So, I mean, I get it. You know, your father maybe isn't as emotionally or physically there as you would like, but he was still around. And that, to me, that just doesn't seem like a strong enough reason for him to, let me just go to drugs, you know, because he still had a very strong motherhood figure in his life, which isn't the same, you know, when we're trying to have that father-son connection. But I think it is great that we're starting to get more and more tidbits about the family, about their history, and about sort of what kind of led him to that point.
He seems to be doubling down, because obviously he felt a bit neglected, and he says that his father wouldn't hurt a fly.
Yeah.
And then he used the phrase, he didn't teach me how to be a man because the world is too much for you. And it almost seems like he is sort of, he's gonna go big or go hard, because his dad, he felt, wasn't the man that he really wanted him to be, and wasn't that he was a present father, but he wasn't really as present as he wanted him to be. Okay, let's have a look at the first attack in the house, where he tries to reason with the lady who attacks him with a baseball bat.
Yeah, very hard to reason with
that
somebody,
is possibly the shittiest wake-up call. He has a couple of these, actually.
You've never had a bat wake-up call?
I tend to stay in nicer hotels than that, generally. I've never woken up in a Hampton Inn and had my ass kicked.
You clearly haven't been to all the Hampton Inns.
There is still time. There is still time.
Bucket list.
So he's in this house. He kind of feels it's a bit of a solace. He's on the road. That does not go well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, very quickly, we talked about the fact that he was being aware of his supplies. At that point, he loses everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any more belongings. It's him and the shirt off his back, which he very quickly takes off, which a lot of female fans of the show will be delighted, and some men will be delighted about. it's quite interesting that he didn't seem that bothered about it. He would kind of, I think he just, even though the lady was alarmed and had the child there, he didn't seem to get the reason that she was particularly alarmed. He was, I think because he'd been around people that he could reason with.
Yeah.
He kind of was like, can I get my bag? No. Not sure how to deal with that, which is quite interesting. He's starting to see that he is on his own and feel that not everybody is going to be particularly welcoming.
Which, I mean, this probably sounds really bad, but I mean, I don't know. I guess I just kind of felt like he just lets stuff go a little bit too easily. Because if that is your only food supply, that's your only water supply, I would have fought a little bit harder for that. You know what I mean? I mean, the woman, she did have a bat.
Yeah.
But he, in as far as their size and I'm sure strength, like, I think he could have had a good chance of at least, you know, and if she would have seen, okay, he's just taking his stuff and getting out.
Yeah.
You know, so I just, I don't know. I guess it just, for me, it just kept reading, like, he's just kind of like, well, I don't know, you know, and well, I mean, hopefully I'll just stumble upon something else, you know, and I think he, I mean, I, it's just a, to me, it just kind of read as, okay, he doesn't really quite get the seriousness of it, and his survival instincts, they're kind of floating around, they're there, but they haven't quite snapped onto him, as we did see later in the episode, they definitely did. But just starting off, I think even there, it was still him not fully realizing that, okay, I'm on my own, and if I don't have these supplies or if I don't have whatever I need to survive, I'm going to die.
For me, it was kind of, it was almost like he was, it was the zombie equivalent to going to college, where you go to college for the first day, and you're like, hey, this is amazing, I've got my freedom.
Yeah.
And then you're like, hey, where's my dinner? Where's my breakfast?
Horrible.
Where's
my
mom is not going to, or my dad is not going to do this for me. Mm-hmm. Shit, I need to eat. Yeah. And I think he's gradually realizing that he's like, okay, I assume that I could go somewhere else and I could get some water. There isn't water freely available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think he's realizing that. So we see him back on the road, roadside, zombies in cars, never a good thing. And obviously at that point, that is when we meet these bandits that he's already been warned about, these bad men that are out there and kind of making the most of this. Guy gets stabbed in the face, asks for water. We know these guys mean business right from the beginning. They're kind of less AAA and more like triple oh hell no.
Yes.
Because these are not the guys you want to call on for roadside assistance.
At all. Okay.
Also, what is it with the Clark family obsession with radios? Because the Clark family and radios do not go well together. Obviously, we saw in the last time somebody
it's
used a radio.
Omen. Yeah,
it, you know, it kind of all went to shit a little bit.
I know.
And he's obviously obsessed with getting this radio out of a car. And because the radio goes off, he actually gets discovered and almost killed by the bandits. Do you think we're going to see a running theme of radios? And should he, to be honest with you, just get a Spotify account?
Shameless plug, Radio Shack. Please do what you can to save them, guys. They need all your love and support. I don't know. But I mean, I think before that, with the radio, with him actually coming into contact with the walker, just sort of that his whole interaction with it, you know, with him putting his finger out and like almost allowing the walker to grab his finger. It's like, and then with him grabbing it and not seeming, you know, too alarmed, like he could have gone to the other side of the car
where
it was safer.
That.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he just still seems very fascinated with death. And he seems very fascinated with being among these walkers because of everything that Cecilia's kind of put in his head about the dead and how they're still, I don't know. I mean, it's just really interesting now, you know. And then, like with the radio, of course, it just we have to set ourselves up so that we can push tension and push the storyline along. But I don't know. I mean, I think that it's showing me more and more how more fascinated he's getting with death, how more fascinated he's getting with, like, kind of being on his own and being this, like, nomad dude that he really thinks it's kind of cool when it's not.
Well, he still has this kind of weird relationship with death. I mean, not to go too far forward, we'll get to it later on, but when he was talking to the doctor at the end of the episode, he was talking about, he almost has some very philosophical points of view and statements about death and his relationship with death and how he sees his sort of symbiosis with the walkers, which was quite interesting.
Yeah.
And I think the doctor that he was dealing with was quite surprised about the fact that he had this kind of philosophy around it. But we'll get to that later on. So a couple of recipes in the show tonight. We saw Nick preparing cactus.
Yes, which
didn't go well.
No.
If you would like that recipe, here's Nick's recipe for cactus. Take your shirt off.
Bloody shirt.
Must be bloody before you actually do this. Take a cactus panel. When you pull that off, careful not to spike your hands. Smash it with a rock. Make sure it can be any size rock. It doesn't really matter. Any brand is fine. If it's a known brand rock, totally acceptable. So smash the cactus. Eat it.
And then
throw up. And then throw up. Which I thought was a great recipe there.
Yeah, it was.
He then decided to follow that with a lovely, lovely handful of piss.
Yes, concoction of piss. Yes,
is it? Does that count as a cocktail?
I think so.
Because it came straight from the source?
Yeah.
I'm thinking that.
That's like the definition of a cocktail.
Okay, yeah. So Nick's tipple of the day, hot piss.
Hot piss cocktail,
Piss cocktail. You can use any of the house spirits in that. That's absolutely fine. Yeah. If you were in the situation that Nick was in the middle of the desert, and got to ask, and you were thirsty, would you drink your own pee?
Hell no.
No.
Absolutely not.
I mean, I've drunk light beer. Which is not... It's comparable to pee.
But it's
if we're honest.
Not
but it's not
pee,
actually pee. It didn't come out of my penis. But no, I assume that's the only thing that he's got.
I just thought it was interesting that he vomits from the cactus,
and
but
not
from
his
the piss.
Pee.
Almost as if maybe he's done it before.
And that's one to grow on.
Who knows?
So...
I mean, but again, it just kind of speaks to the resourcefulness, not just being in this particular situation, but his resourcefulness as a drug addict.
Yeah.
I'm sure there have been many times where he went without food, where he was left stranded and abandoned without any type of anything.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever, you know, had I would call it the Nick special cocktail. But it was interesting. And then with him, we forgot the dogs, the lovely walker dog.
Oh, yes.
Souffle.
We'll get to that recipe later on.
Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's just a lot of him, I think, thinking he knows how to take care of himself, or like thinking, oh, yeah, this is going to save me.
Well, I think we've seen that from two of the young guys. Obviously, there's Nick, and obviously Chris has gone a little bit gaga, and he's sort of, you know, gone off, and his dad's chasing him at the moment. We'll get to that in another episode. Obviously, we saw at the end of this episode, throwing forward, shit's going to get crazy next week.
Yeah.
So this was kind of like the sorbet with piss, just to get us ready for next week's madness. After the wee episode... pee drinking, we saw another flashback. Now, this was, again, back to Nick in the treatment facility. He was sitting with his girlfriend, Gloria. That was where Madison came in.
Yeah.
And obviously broke the news about... I think I can only assume that when Maddie walked in... And it was nice to see her in the episode.
Yeah,
it was really nice to see her. He was kind of expecting... I don't know if you feel the same way, that... His father wasn't there because his father didn't care. And obviously then we found out very quickly that it wasn't the case. So when Madison broke the news, did Nick take it the way that you thought he was going to take it?
I did. But it was also, I think even for me, it made it so much more sad because... There was that expectation of, okay, he's not here again. Like, what basically trumped me, you know? And I think that was something that he was used to, which is just even more disheartening to sort of see that, you know, his whole viewpoint, or I would say a large part of his viewpoint of his dad, was him just not being there. And now it's him realizing that, oh, he's not going to be here ever again. Like, there's not going to be an opportunity at all. And then thinking back to the flashback before where he sort of gives it to Gloria, which, you know, he's talking to his – what he'd like to say to his dad, and then just sort of thinking, like, did he ever have that conversation with his dad? Was he ever able to express that side of him? Were they ever able to talk about that or make amends? Like, was there any type of him getting that out of his system? Obviously, I don't think so, because he went, you know, right back. So there was that lack of support there. So I think that he took it – any way that a person, you know, would take it. But for me, it just sort of showed, like, he was very used to his dad not being there, and then just having that realization of him being gone forever and just really sinking in, like, okay, now there's no one around to teach me how to be a man.
Well, I think I agree with you on that. I also think the fact that he kind of assumed instantly that his father had died at work, because obviously he felt that his father's relationship with his day-to-day job was closer than the relationship that he had his father. The job meant more to his father than his son did, than Nick personally did. Mm. I think there's also a fact that there, as you talk about, you know, the fact that he may or may not have spoken to him, I think there was a regret that obviously Gloria had got him to a point where he was willing to say things to his father that he hadn't said for whatever reason, because he didn't feel able to or wasn't able to collect the thoughts together in a coherent way.
Yeah. And shout out here in the chat.
Yeah.
We have Diedros Masha. I think Nick and Chris's arcs are going to parallel each other. Mm. Nick with no father figure and Chris finally having his father around for good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that Nick is now searching, and we can kind of see from this episode, he's searching for that. I think that in a strange way, Celia and Gloria kind of paralleled each other. Mm. Like, they freed him to sort of open himself up about things that he was feeling and his true feelings and what he's really been thinking this whole time.
Yeah.
And so now I think he's kind of searching for that father figure, or just that something that he needs to just help him feel more normal, or just more like he's a part of something.
Well, I think that's one of the frictions that we've seen. There has been a little bit of a rub between Nick and Chris.
Yeah.
And I think now we're seeing a bit more of this backstory for Nick. I think part of his issue with Chris is the fact that because Chris, he kind of was pushing his father away.
Yeah.
And Nick's attitude, I think, is subliminally a bit more, you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Exactly.
And the fact that you're kind of taking your father for granted.
Mm-hmm.
He could die, yeah. You know, he could do whatever. So I think that's kind of thing. So I think that's a really good point, actually. I think we are going to see some sort of mirroring there. So after the flashback, we get the dog attack. It's as far as days at the zombie office go for Nick, this was a shitty day.
No, it was.
Pretty much anything that could have gone wrong went wrong.
Well, it was more pissy. I'm glad it wasn't as shitty as it could have been.
Yes.
Yeah, it was more pissy. But yeah, no, it was really, really bad. But I think that that's a good thing. Like, I actually like that, because I think that this is all stuff that really needs to happen. I mean, from what I'm getting from the whole, I guess, theme of this episode, it was just sort of really trying to push Nick's arc along.
Yeah.
And just sort of really to highlight sort of all of his flaws, all of like the character traits about him that really need to be corrected and strengthened if he wants to survive in this new world. So I think that it was great, you know, sort of seeing that things weren't easy for him, because things haven't been easy, but he's had a lot of luck on his side. And even with these scenes, he's still been able to make it out just by the slim, you know, seam of his pants. But he's been able to survive. So this was just another great scene to just kind of show, like, okay, no, you don't have it all together. You don't have the answers.
Well, again, previously, there's the fan. Every time, certainly in the first season and the first half of the second season, there has always been this thing where when something was about to go wrong, there was someone there to just pull it back, to save him and to help him, and he just simply doesn't have that. And also the fact that he's making his own decisions now.
Yeah.
And he's realizing that if he makes the wrong decision,
that can end you.
That can end you and have really serious consequences. So he's now in the middle of the desert, and he's being bitten by a dog. Dog attracts walkers. Walkers eat dog. He thinks that's good. It's not really it's not really the best thing, but he does get his second meal of the day.
Yeah,
which is dog guts. And I've wrote down. I wrote down the recipe for that as well.
Dog souffle.
Yes, one dog, carefully eaten by Walker. Eat dog. There you go. So second. So I think actually.
Yummy. I think I know what I'm having for dinner tonight, guys.
I think I can see a Fear the Walking Dead cooking
recipe,
show.
Yeah, recipe cookbook.
Recipe book.
Okay.
Maybe for the holidays.
Sponsored by AfterBuzz, maybe?
Yeah.
Just send all proceeds and donations to Simon Biz and Ashley Janet.
Yeah, just do it. there's a lot of food in here tonight. Yeah. Yes. Last time they got offered really nice Mexican food made for them, and now it's dead dog.
Which adds along to the grotesque theme.
It does. Exactly. That ties in very nicely. Now, this is the point where we really start to see Nick kind of go back into his losing it moment. Now, obviously, he's been bit by dogs. He's injured.
Yeah.
So we are starting to see him really suffer with that. He's not feeling too great. He hasn't eaten properly for, we can only assume, at least a day and a half or 2 days. He hasn't had a lot of water. He's starting to really suffer from this. You can see, obviously, as well, the sun has been beaten down. He's been lying on top of a bus. It's not been a good time.
Too.
And he's injured. He's probably losing a lot of blood.
Yeah.
Now, this is where we see him walking with the walkers.
Yeah.
This is not the first time we've seen him do this. Obviously, we've seen him smeared in blood, and it helps disguise him.
But it was very different.
Do you find it quite interesting that this the safe place for Nick is by literally heading right into the belly of the beast and hiding amongst, you know, it's kind of like finding, the place you'll find him least is where you least expect him to be, and that's right in the middle of a bunch of zombies. Why does he find that so appealing and such a safe place?
You know, I like that you use the word safe, because there is a sense of comfort there.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that more and more. Like, he actually feels like he's a part of them in some strange way. And I think that, I mean, it could be for several reasons. I think it's because they are so feared and because people are just so quick to let's kill him and let's kind of get him out the way and kind of cast him aside. And maybe that's kind of how he's felt for a portion of his life, just kind of felt sort of cast aside and like people were bothered with him. But I also think it's, I feel like he really has control in that situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's the only person in that group that is like very well aware of what's happening, where they're going. If he needs to get himself out of that situation, he can. And then we see in the scene with the bandits that show up there, to me, it almost seemed like he felt like the walkers were his army. Like, he was in command of them, and he kind of had some control over them and was able to enact this you know, I guess, really, really horrible deed on these guys.
Well, you say army, and I think it's almost kind of like an armor as well, because they are his shield. They'll just, I mean, you know, the real world is all around them, but it's just a little bit of fleshy buffer.
Yeah, a little protection there.
Yeah, but also the fact that there's a really strange sequence where he feels or believes that
They're talking to him.
Yeah. And what they're saying was quite interesting, because it was, come with us, we'll take you home. They're obviously all heading to the border. Now, what did you take away from that? By coming with us and taking you home, did you think that it was a physical home, going to a location that was going to be a safe place, or maybe across the border? Or giving himself up and becoming one of them, that they were his home, he would become a walker and be part of their group?
I think it was a little bit of both,
right.
You know, because going back to the comment, he now has this fixation about the dead, and I don't think he's afraid of them anymore, really, as much. Now that he knows that he can walk among them and he has that power there, I think it's a mix of both. I think it's, when I'm with these walkers, and as long as I have this blood on me, I'm protected, and they're going to lead me to, you know, a situation that's going to make things better for me, or I can become a part of them in a sense, you know?
Is it also because, I mean, I don't know if you agree with this, but humans are more unpredictable than walkers. You kind of know what a walker's going to do. They're either going to eat you, or if they think you're not a threat or you're one of them,
they'll just
walk along with you. But you don't know. We've seen this with the bandits. You know, guy fumbles his gun, he drops it, they turn up, they just shoot. It's like it's the living beings, the living thinking human beings that are the unpredictable ones, and the ones that he just can't read.
Out.
He doesn't have that ability.
Yeah.
Also, as part of this group, we see his girlfriend from rehab, Gloria.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, physically, I'm assuming that she's not physically there, because the last time
we see her in episode one of season one.
We do, which is another flashback that happens just after this zombie thing. So, do you think he starts to recognize these faces? Why do you think he's seeing them there? What do you think? Do you think he feels guilty about Gloria's death?
I don't think so much guilt as just much of he recognizes the people in his life that he really counted on. Mm. You know, people who didn't really judge him. They were just sort of there for him and didn't really ask a whole lot of questions.
Yeah.
Gloria, from what we've seen so far, was just kind of like a ride or die girlfriend, you know. Didn't matter what he did. It didn't matter what mistakes he made. She was just going to be there and be a support for him and to him and help him in whatever endeavor he had. And be it was the wrong endeavors, it was them getting high off of drugs.
Yeah.
But I think it just sort of for him, because in his hallucinative state, it was just him I guess just sort of trying to recall and being in that place, almost like if being among the walkers was like a place of calm and peace for him in a sense.
Kind of the same strength that he would get, that release, that safe, warm feeling that he might get from using drugs.
From using drugs or from being with his girlfriend. So, yeah, I think for him it was just a way for him to recall those feelings, because that was the time he needed it the most. He was malnourished, he was dehydrated, you know, injured.
Yeah.
I think it just, for him, it was like a coping mechanism, almost, in a sense.
So we see the zombies walking. Yeah. We also see at that point the Tijuana 40 miles sign. So we know that he's at that point already. In a couple of days, he's covered about 60 miles.
Yeah.
So we know that he's heading, obviously, toward the border in that. This is where they come face to face with the bandits again. Now, really interesting that one of the bandits who's previously been, he was the ringleader when they their paths crossed earlier in the episode. Yeah. And there's a moment where clearly that guy spots that Nick is in there. He recognizes Nick and he sees that Nick is not a walker. Mm-hmm. I think he sees from the eyes the way that they connect.
Yeah.
Which then distracts him and he ends up fumbling his gun, dropping the bullets, which results in him getting eaten. What do you think he was more surprised by, the walkers or the fact that there was a human walking among them? Because, I mean, I'm no expert, but I would be quite surprised to see a living human in the middle of a bunch of walkers.
I don't know if I would even take the time to really pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Because, and of course, they needed it for the show purposes, because we see the people that we'll talk about a little bit later. Who he eventually encounters, they also recognize that he's not a walker.
Yeah.
But it just seems interesting to me that people would actually, like, think to look that intently into a crowd of walkers. My intent is just to shoot you and kill you or get the hell out of Dodge, because I don't know if you are a walker. And I wouldn't expect someone to be walking among them at all.
No.
I mean, maybe that's something that, you know, because this is still very new in a sense. Like this whole epidemic is still fairly new. Like it's been maybe a couple of months.
Yeah.
So I don't know if people know necessarily that is a trick that you can do. This is interesting.
Because we're starting to see more of sort of physical milestones. Obviously, we're talking about the 100 miles and then the 40 miles.
Yeah.
Do you think we're going to start seeing, as we progress through this part of the season, we're going to see more acknowledgement of time passing? We're going to see days and nights properly. We're going to get some sort of acknowledgement of a timeline.
I hope so.
Because,
I mean, we don't know, or at least it wasn't clear to me how much time had gone by from the very beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
You know, like how many days or however long he had been with the woman at the very beginning. So I think that we might start to get some milestones, but I think that, you know, time for this show, it's like very relative and objective. It doesn't really matter. We just kind of know that this is what it is. This is how the world is. We might probably get a little bit of that if there is, some reuniting of Madison and all the other characters in the show with Nick. But I think for right now, for me, the miles just sort of, like, the distance was more important. It wasn't necessarily about time.
Yeah.
It was just, how much further do I have to get to where I need to go? And still, we're trying to figure out what his real motivation was. I mean, I think he knew or assumed that there were people there, but why was that such a strong motivation, trying to find these people versus being with your own family? You know what I mean?
Well, this is where we obviously see the bandits. Two of the guys end up getting killed.
Yeah.
And then one guy goes, fuck all this.
Yeah,
I'm driving.
Right.
So drives off. Do you think we're going to see that guy again? And also, at that exact point, we meet someone called Francisco and Luciano, or Lucy, as is also referred to. And they're looking for someone. It's not him.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea who they were referring to.
Yeah.
As in, we don't know who that guy is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite interesting. Do you think we're going to find out who he is, the person they're looking for? And do you think we're going to meet that guy that drove off again? Or do you think he's kind of gone?
I think he's just kind of gone. I think that whole scene sort of served the purpose of just sort of showing Nick and that environment. But I think it will be interesting to figure out, and I'm sure it'll be somebody significant, who the group, like who Luciano's group was actually looking for.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it would be Juan's father, who they said we were looking for him.
Yeah.
But Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But I think it is, it's definitely somebody who was a part of their group. Maybe it was somebody who was a part of Cecilia's camp. So, because we don't know all of the people who were there.
And we don't know where they've come from.
Exactly.
Because obviously, I mean, I don't remember from the beginning of the episode. I was trying to remember if the lady with Juan, whether they were going north or whether they were going south. Mm-hmm. Because she had a very clear demarcation of where certain things might be, and there were some people that were going to still harbour the dead. She did have some sort of idea, as if there was some sort of network that may have been communicating, so you kind of knew. Very similar to in The Walking Dead, where you knew if you were going to Terminus or you were going to somewhere else, there was that kind of communication and network. So we've met Francisco, we've met Luciano, Lucy. There is a third person in that group who has not said anything yet, has not done anything yet, a younger guy. Be interested to see where he fits into it. I think we might see Jeep Dude again. I think what we might see potentially is that he is going to be part of the camp where Nick ends up. And I think perhaps is going to create some trouble and maybe say that Nick was actually got those guys killed. So I think potentially we could see that, because I think Nick getting to a good place and everything being happy is not really going to work.
Of course. I mean, we even see that from the preview that's coming up, and we don't know which episode it is, but we know that coming up in future episodes, he is going to cause things to go awry, which will be interesting to see, because, you know, his one of his motivations for leaving the group was because he felt like they ruined everything, you know, like what they really meant for good, they ended up turning it into something that was really, really bad. So it'll be interesting to sort of see that shift in him too, where he's now part of this community that's protected, that's safe, that basically has everything that he's looking for, and how he'll mess that up.
Well, we had one more flashback in the episode as well, and it was Gloria and Nick in the drug den, where we obviously started the first season all that time ago. And they're obviously talking about a book that Nick's father had given him, a book that meant a lot to both of them in two very different ways. And it's at that point where when Nick and Gloria are shooting up, and she says to him, okay, I sound like I'm going to be interested in that book. You can read it to me in the morning. Now, I take from the positioning of that episode, that is the night before everything went mad and she died. So I'm wondering if he's still harboring a lot of guilt about that, because he didn't, because he was obviously cooking the drugs to for her to shoot up, which he may feel guilty about. He may still have this unresolved thing about wanting to share this thing that he had with his father, if he'd come more to terms with his relationship with his father. He didn't get to share that and discuss that and open up more about that. Yeah. So he may be harbouring a couple of things from that sequence, I think, which we're going to see evolve later on. So, moving forward, we're in the abandoned town. This is where Nick goes looking for drugs, because obviously he's in pain.
Yes.
And then he pops into the salon.
The salon.
Because, you know, even when you're surrounded by the undead, you've got to have a little mani-pedi.
Of course.
I'm thinking you've got to stop off and do that.
Or at least get the eyebrows.
Exactly.
Sure eyebrows on fleek.
I know. Hair can get awfully fuzzy when you're out there in the desert. And that's obviously where he gets the point with, he meets up with Lucy and Francisco. And that's where he gets taken into the camp and he meets the doctor. Some really interesting exchanges between Nick and the doctor. Mm-hmm. I assume he's a doctor.
We don't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't say.
Nick asks him, and he
completely kind of jumps over it.
Now, I would think that if someone said, are you a doctor, that would be a quite easy question to answer, because you either are or you aren't.
Or maybe it's just in this world now where maybe there aren't doctors, but I know how to treat people because I've had some experience doing it. I'm not a literal doctor, but people come to me.
I've seen House.
Right.
So
a few episodes of ER. I got a few episodes of ER on TiVo, so, you know, it makes me qualified, right?
As good as.
Exactly.
And they have some really interesting interactions and things, little kind of, it's almost like a meeting of minds. And we've seen this kind of mind play between various characters in the first half of the season, where they're not letting everything, all their knowledge base go. They're just trying to suss each other out.
Of course.
A really interesting thing that's said is death is not to be feared, but it shouldn't be pursued, which I thought was a really, really interesting thing to say. What did you think when that was discussed?
Well, I think that in some ways it kind of contradicts a little bit of what Cecilia's philosophy was, and I think it's somewhat of the philosophy that Nick adapted while they were in that first camp. I think he is maybe starting to get the lines muddied. It's like, no, it's okay for you to not fear the dead and for you to, you know, have that you know, notion about you that you can handle yourself in these extremely dangerous, seemingly fearful situations. But I think that in a lot of the ways, in a lot of the flashbacks, like, he was very much on the veer of death in so many different scenes and so many different ways. And I think that he's kind of accepting, like, maybe that's not such a bad thing. Like, maybe that's okay. But it, for me, it was just kind of the whole exchange with the doctor was a snap back into, no, like, this is not how it's supposed to be. There is a way to still have a life and for you to still have that connection with the people who aren't there. But it doesn't have to be you physically dead or becoming a walker or whatever you think you're going to become. Like, there is still so much. There's so much great about life that we're, you know, we can experience, and we have all these opportunities. So, you know, like, basically don't cut your head off quite yet.
One thing we touched on earlier was the fact that we were talking about his relationship, Nick's relationship with the dead, and whether he sees them as armor or not. And there was one quote that he actually dipped in as well. He said, "The dead are safer than men with guns." Which I thought was actually telling about his relationship. And again, we touched on this. Nick said, "I want to be where the dead aren't monsters." So do you think, because that is a really weird contradiction to what he said about the dead being safer than men with guns, but he wants to be where the dead aren't monsters. Does he want to be somewhere where the dead are seen as almost companions, where they live in some sort of harmony?
Yeah.
Or that we understand the walkers? It was kind of a weird, kind of ambiguous.
Yeah, I don't really know where his headspace is as far as that's concerned, because a lot of people are thinking that maybe we can cure these people. Like, maybe there's a way for them to still be in that state, but maybe have some sort of cognitive recognition or them to have some sort of resemblance of their old selves. Or maybe it's just, you know, he just kind of feels like that's not the end, you know, made a lot of references in the first half of the season where death isn't the end. So I think maybe he is feeling like, since he's more courageous, maybe he can push the limit and maybe there is something beyond death that makes sense for me, or where I can exist and, you know, not have to be surrounded, like you said, by these humans, these human beings who are dangerous, who are unpredictable, and who I can't really read all the time.
Well, we're coming very close to the end of the show. A couple of things to just finish off with. Now, when Nick obviously left the doctor's surgery, or the surgery, don't know if he's a doctor, and he kind of looked initially quite happy. Then his face changed. I couldn't read his face at the end of the episode. I wasn't sure what he was thinking.
I got a sense of contentment for now. I think it'll change, because it always does. But I think I got a sense of a little bit of accomplishment. Like, I got here and I made it and I did it, and people probably didn't think I would survive, but I did. And so a little bit of, not maybe cockiness, but I think just, again, things worked out for me once again, you know? Who else but Nick, you know?
Do you think that safety, that feeling of safety is actually more scary for him than being out there? Because he's like, if I'm happy and everything's safe, the only way to go from safe is dangerous.
It's danger.
Yeah.
Well, time will tell. That we can definitely go into predictions with that. But I do think for right now, he's in a content place. But as we know, Nick, it will not last very long.
Okay, as we always do with this show, Carol Watch.
Yes.
So, very difficult with an episode that is just about Nick.
Yes. But let's get into predictions.
Let's have a talk about it. So what do you think?
Well, I think since we only got snippets of Nick, I would have to say it's very difficult. I think the dog might be the Carol Watch. Oh, no, he died. So, no, I think that Nick, this was a really great episode. Just, again, to sort of play on how far he's come. We delved into his past a little bit more, seeing his attitude there. And then we got to see some really, really great scenes of his character and his attitude in this episode. So I think that he has a lot of great potential to be the next Carol Watch. I think that there's still a lot of development that he would have to go through. But I can also see his character moving in a different direction where he does become this like death obsessed, you know, walker obsessed character,
yeah,
who feels more comfortable and at peace being among the dead than actually like trying to survive and get away and actually find a place where he can live a normal average life. So I think he's like, since this is the mid-ish season-ish, premiere-ish, I'm going to say he's like the Carol Watch-ish.
Okay.
Kind of in the middle, halfway.
I know we don't know a huge amount about her yet, but I see Lucy, because you could see on her face, she's obviously very determined. She's looking for something. So I think we really, I think we're going to see a lot more from her. We're going to learn about her backstory very, very quickly. And I think she is going to be, for me, this Carol Watch. So, end of the episode. It's season two, part two, episode one, or episode eight, Grotesque. Very interesting episode. We learned a lot about Nick. And obviously, I think if we do want to recap on those recipes, you can find the recipes for the cactus, the handful of piss,
cocktail,
and also piss cocktail, and dead dog at cactuspisscocktaildeaddog.com.
All one word.
Which, we'll post a link afterwards. Thank you very much for joining. Welcome back. Where can we find you, Ashley?
You guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Ashley_Chatman. Be checking out those recipes this week, guys.
I'll be bringing in some samples.
And where can they find you?
Ashley, welcome back. I've genuinely missed you. It's lovely to be back together again. And next week, we're going to have Ben. So watch the episode, listen to this, and do tell all your friends. Subscribe and like and share it all over social media. And we will see you next week. Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
Bye, deadheads.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.